What is up, ladies and gentlemen? It's the Altered State Podcast. It's episode 83. It's Brandon. It's John. What's new, buddy?
Oh, nothing. You know, living the life.
That's right.
It's the superb owl day.
Oh yeah, there is something going on tonight, isn't there?
I'm awfully excited to watch some commercials and lose some money on shit that I don't know anything about.
Right. Yeah. We've talked about it before. We're not huge football people. I know what's going on for the most part, but I just don't deep dive. I've never been a fantasy football kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, KC's in it, so I'll watch it. Love me some Mahomes.
See, my frustration is that Kansas City's in it. The fact that I have to look at Kansas City Chiefs shit all day bothers me. And it's not because the Chiefs bother me.
Just but the city of Kansas City bothers you?
Yeah, well, I'm not a big fan of the city of Kansas City. But so this is really going to... I may alienate a bunch of viewers right now, or listeners. I'm not sure. But I'm going to... Some anal retentive bullshit, as I normally... As I like to be on. Or don't like to be on. The Chiefs' visual branding is the most infuriating in all of sports to me.
Okay.
Because it is ragingly inconsistent.
Okay.
Picture the Chiefs logo in your head.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The terminal of the C, like where the C is open.
Yes.
Is that parallel? Like, do the pieces come together like this? Or does the bottom slant out like a ramp?
I picture it parallel.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
It's both.
Oh, okay.
They have two logos. The only difference...
I love how this is what upsets you, though.
Right. The only difference is the low terminal of the C... On the Chiefs' helmet, the low terminal of the C slants out like a ramp. On almost every other piece of merchandise or paraphernalia or fucking TV promo shit,
right,
the terminal of the C is closed and it's parallel ends. It's the only difference, and it's just seemingly arbitrarily interchanged between each other. And it makes me so fucking mad.
I can see, yes.
Like, yeah. I can't look at them the same. So,
are there any other sports franchises you despise just based on their logo designs?
Oh, how much time you got?
Yeah, this is that's a different.
Yeah, show. I was gonna say we could talk about the arbitrary orange stripe on the shoulder pad of the home Anaheim Ducks jersey. Mm-hmm. Also, just aggravating and out of nowhere and doesn't fit.
Wow.
But so, like, I used to work at this place called Heads and Threads. That I very much loved. Used to be in Del Mar Loop. Now they're in St. Charles. Any of our St. Charles listeners, if you need some custom shit, go check them out. They do great work. But so one of our big clients, like, so Heads and Threads, we did like custom screen printing, embroidery shit, but also like sports apparel retail, like jerseys and shit. And the Rams were one of our big clients. So we did a lot of work with the Rams. When the Rams left, we started carrying more Chiefs shit.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, like, I didn't find this out, this logo situation, until the guy comes in, like, to offer it to the salesman from whatever brand it was, whatever company, and he's, like, showing us the Chiefs shit we can order, and he brought in, like, samples. I was like, are you trying to sell me knockoff Chiefs gear? And he was like, what are you, and, like, he was real insulted, and I was like, this isn't the logo, look at the terminal of the C. And the guy looked at me like I was fucking stupid. And he was like, what do you mean? He's like, what's the terminal of a C? I was like, you're not speaking my language, nope. But that's not the logo.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, it is. Yeah, look, all officially licensed, whatever. And then I started looking into it, and I was like, oh, my God.
They change it.
This is officially licensed, and the Chiefs just have two versions of the same logo, and the only difference is the low terminal of the C. It is absolutely asinine to me. So the fact that I have to spend all day watching TV... And I'll see a close-up of Pat Mahomes and his helmet. The logo's going to look one way, but then the little graphic that comes under the screen is going to look different.
We watch.
I hope I ruin that for everyone.
We watch TV now. For very different reasons.
Yeah, I get
first
real
off,
hung up on dumb shit like that.
I apologize for bringing it up. I didn't know it was that sensitive of a subject.
Oof.
It's like I asked you about, you know, Father Carmichael in the chapel or something when you were a kid. I don't know why I went right to Carmichael. That's the weirdest name to pull, but I was trying to think of someone I didn't want to have a name that could have been somebody
we knew. I was going to say, now I'm going to start scanning through your past to see if you find a Father Carmichael.
Yeah.
This might turn into a real therapy session real quick, Brandon.
Math teacher, eighth grade. Anyways, no, but...
yeah, it
so just, Super Bowl.
It just bugs me, man. And
I see.
It's shit like that. Like, I will never forgive... See,
now I know next time I need to fill like 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and be like, hey, I'm going to mention some fucking uniform that you hate. Be like, hey, have you seen these new uniforms?
Oh, there's piles.
And just let you go.
You, like... So sports logos, sports aesthetics is a big thing for me. Well, aesthetics in general are a big thing for me. I love logo design. But football particularly does an inexcusably bad job. And it's only inexcusable because the amount of money they make, which means the amount of money they must be spending. Like the LA Rams rebrand is fucking insulting.
Agreed.
The front of the Rams head looks like a penis.
Yeah.
Clearly. Yeah. Clear as day.
Yeah. Well, they're dickheads.
Like,
so it works.
But like everything about it is just like, how do you spend that? Like, you're a billion-dollar franchise. You did this rebrand when you moved to L.A. That fucking design firm, that was a multi-million-dollar rebrand.
There had to be a few artists that were designed to do that kind of design.
Right, just for fun. And, like, the fact that people just, like, signed off on it is like...
Right.
Why are you spending your money so poorly?
I didn't write it down, but what was the something C you were so upset about?
The Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah.
C, well, the Terminal?
Terminal C. That might have to be the name of the show. Terminal C? Is that what you call it?
The Terminal of the C. In any letter that has a loop that remains open,
right?
That is referred to as the Terminal.
Okay.
Like if we're dissecting letter forms. So the open part of the C is the Terminal of the C.
It's going to be Terminal C ? Because no one else will know what the fuck that means either.
My design people come to my aid, and I for anyone who is like really design minded, I just ruined the Chiefs for you, as the Chiefs were ruined for me roughly 6 years ago. Because I'd seen that logo my whole life and I'd never thought about
it. And you had to pump it out constantly.
Right. Well, I just never thought about it
right.
until I was like purchasing Chiefs shit.
Yeah.
Like if the Cardinals logo or the Blues logo had an inconsistency like that, I would have noticed it in a heartbeat because I handled a lot of their shit personally because I was a fan. But like by not being a football fan and not being a Kansas Cityan, I had only a passing relationship with that logo.
Sure.
But as soon as I had to start purchasing shit for the store, I was like, wait a minute.
Yep.
This is incongruent.
That's right.
And it's fucking arbitrary. Like there is no, it's not like one, why they would do that doesn't make sense at all. But once they did it, they use them just kind of willy nilly. And it's like, why the fuck don't you just pick one and stick with it? And 98%
First off,
of people wouldn't notice.
Easy on the willy nilly talk. I mean, this is a family show.
Yeah, Father Carmichael's listening.
Willy nilly. Jessica said something the other day and I laughed for like an hour. She said I was hem-hawing around. I'm like, how fucking old? Hem-hawing around? That doesn't even sound... What's that mean, Jess? Hem-hawing around. I said, John, you've been hem-hawing around. What the fuck does that mean? It doesn't mean a goddamn thing.
It means you're pussyfooting.
Which is?
You're piddling.
But see, I don't know. I don't know. It didn't sit right with me. It doesn't sound right coming from a younger person.
Yeah.
You need to be like 80 before you say
we're not on. Younger people, buddy.
Well, we're not fucking old, goddamn.
But no, like, it's just...
To prove how young we are, let's talk about something current and modern and little WandaVision or little SNL.
Kids?
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk SNL first. I loved SNL last night.
I was so... That was a highlight episode.
I think it was so enjoyable because I had zero expectations. I only know that guy from one thing,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. And I had no idea what to expect.
Right.
And I think because he had no, extra baggage, like, oh, he's this type of actor or he's this type of person, they could put him in almost anything, and mm-hmm. it worked.
Yeah.
And he looked like one of those guys who's like, I just want to come play. Throw me in something. Dude, he didn't have to be the main guy in anything. Just put me in something.
He is his father's son.
Absolutely.
He is 100% as versatile as Eugene Levy is.
Yep. Yep.
And I was so joyed by that.
Yep. Even the stupid little walkthrough was boring at the monologue. And then when Eugene Levy hits, you're like, worth it.
Yeah.
I'll take that 2.5 minutes of not much.
Interestingly,
that's worth it.
I would agree that probably the worst part
was the monologue. I would agree 100%. It just... it was dull. It was a, right. a drag.
Yeah, it was. It was. And I think that's. I think to say the monologue was the worst part is less of an insult to the monologue and more of just a praise for the rest of the sketches.
I would agree. Yep.
Because none of them were duds.
Right.
And sure, some were funnier than others.
Sure.
But like, there weren't any sketches that I watched and was like,
shit. Nah. Right. Exactly.
And almost every episode, there's one or two. Oh, you're there's just like, yeah. Eh, all right, this isn't for me.
Well, usually there's one or two good ones, and the rest are kind of just right. whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. This one, they were all, dude, the cold open, the Super Bowl cold open
was very funny.
Was awesome, yep. dude. I thought
was that the cold open? Yeah, the cold open was in the party when they're wearing the mask and take all the masks off.
No, the cold the cold open was they were doing like NFL on CBS.
Oh, yes.
So they were like all the talking heads. Yes. But they were talking through the whole process. They were like, and now to see the other side.
Yes. Yeah, that was hilarious.
Sorry, Democrats. No sex trafficking in my pizza place.
That's right. Like, yeah, those fucking commercials were great. Those were great. But yeah, I was thinking
it was so funny.
That Super Bowl party where they all decide to take their masks off.
Yeah, and then they're another like, fucking great
oh, thing. And I've been here. I'm like, oh, yeah.
right.
Sounds like dumbass people, you
I've
know.
I've been so careful.
Yeah, right. I've only stayed with people in my bubble, which is, you know, me and my wife and...
My brother
and his neighbor and, you know... The 12 guys he wrestles every month or whatever, something like that, you know, shit like that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, 32 sweaty wrestlers? No problem.
Yeah.
You know, they all landed so well.
We deserve this.
We deserve this, yes.
Yeah, I thought that was a... They start eating the chili with their hands.
Yes, exactly. And they couldn't taste or smell it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was good stuff.
That was a fantastic... The,
I will say...
The Universal Studios driving tour?
Yes, that was pretty solid, too. Yep. Yeah, they were all
Goofy
like...
Goofy dudes don't get me slick.
Right. Yeah. Or
who's your softener?
Soft?
Do I have to say who my softener is? No. No, you do not.
That was the best. Or yeah, what some guy jumps on the bus and he's like
the elf from Harry Potter.
Yeah, Dabo. Yeah, that's right. Oh, that was funny shit. Yeah, the sketches were very, I mean, they weren't like anything like groundbreaking or some great new idea. They were all like, you know, probably ideas you've seen in other sketches or other,
mm-hmm.
but they worked very well. They were, you know, I don't say cast well because it's just the host, but he hit very well with it. He seemed like he really wanted to be part of it and gave it all energy and stuff like that.
The digital sketch where it was supposed to be like a sex hotline, but it was Zillow.
Then it was Zillow. That was killer.
Oh my God.
Oh, that was
I was laying next to Libby. We were watching it, and I'm losing my mind. I'm like, that's fucking you, man.
That is you,
Libby.
And that, I don't know if it was just a St. Louis feed or what, but they did, you know, they usually do the little buffer of the, you know, host and this little picture or whatever, mm-hmm. and then they roll into the show. They did the buffer, and then they did a regular commercial, and then they rolled into that Zillow commercial. So I was like, wait, what's this real quick? Because until you notice a couple
seamless.
People, you're like, ooh, I didn't notice that
wait,
was a real thing.
What?
Yeah. Like, ooh, it's a little early for these commercials, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was hilarious. That was hilarious.
No, I thought that whole the weekend update was great as usual.
Yep.
I never get tired of Michael Che trying to frame Colin Jost as a racist.
Yeah, I was just going to say
that
country music singer thing or whatever it was. Yeah.
So
I wonder
Morgan,
where we learned
Wallen
that line.
Has been canceled for reportedly using the N-word in video service. I wonder where he learned that from, Colin.
So great. Yeah, picture of him and so great. Yeah, they seem to really enjoy like writing with each other and performing
with each
other. Yeah, I think
they're a really good... I think they are... I'm going to go as far as to say... They are my favorite Weekend Update duo of the 2000s.
Ooh, okay.
And that puts them against Faye and Fallon, who were great.
Faye and Poehler?
And Poehler and Poehler
and
Myers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I think we've had a lot. I think there's been a lot of good. Again,
that's not a knock.
Is not a statement to denigrate Fallon and Faye or Poehler and Myers. I just think Che and Jost are that. I think they are uniquely in sync with each other.
Sure.
And I think they're a throwback.
It's a different dynamic than we've ever seen too.
Right.
You know what I mean? So.
Well, and I think they're a throwback to the days when it's like Weekend Update really was a show within a show. Like you don't see Colin Jost or Michael Che in anything else. They and the type of jokes that they do aren't jokes that are done throughout the rest of the show.
Right.
You know, like I feel like Weekend Update, for like especially during the Seth Meyers era, just became like riffing on the shit that they were already doing sketches about.
Right.
And it was always funny. I've always loved Weekend Update, but I prefer it a little bit as that kind of like show within a show.
Right. Right. Oh, jeez. Producer John needs to work on his mic skills.
Producer John just needs a new mic stand, perhaps a new microphone. It might just be time for me to invest again in a new mic.
And sponsors need to contact us.
Right.
Pay for a new mic.
I'm thinking by spring, I'm just going to have to upgrade.
Well, I think we'll be ready for a good upgrade by then.
Yeah.
All around studio upgrade.
Sure, sure. The whole works. Maybe by like 420-ish.
Right, exactly.
Which is not an Easter egg for something
I don't know what you're referring to whatsoever.
We'll hear the light of day.
That's right. This is flash forward 3 months where I'll be yelling, call back.
Right.
You know. Anyways, what were we chatting about? Oh, SNL.
Yeah,
Weekend update and stuff. I know I've talked about it before, but that's Che and Joe's back and forth, like always trying to get him as like the racist kind of jokes and stuff like that. Goes back to that Dave Chappelle Mark Twain award thing, where they're all three.
I'm here to represent Mark Twain.
Oh my god! He starts reading
it about. Killed.
Oh my god! It was the best thing ever.
Mark Twain Awards ceremony was like one of my favorite things of the last year.
Absolutely,
I've watched it 4 or 5 times. It always cracks me up, and I think that's my favorite joke in it.
It's one of the best.
It's top three. Yes, like it absolutely. Just kills. Yes. And it was so unsuspecting.
Yes.
The other one that gets me every time is Jon Stewart, when he's like, and when he walked away from that $30 million, it was at that moment that I realized Comedy Central has $30 million.
That's right. Yep. Yeah.
Great bits.
It's great bits. Yeah. I didn't want to get off topic.
Anyone who hasn't watched that, hop on Netflix and watch.
Yeah. I mean, it's only like an hour 20. It's well worth it. It's well worth it. I watched it on PBS when it first came out. And this is the best thing I've ever seen on PBS in my life.
It's so fantastic. They did such a great job with that.
Yeah, they really did. They really did. What else was on SNL I wanted to get to? I didn't do a good job of taking notes last night. I didn't really pay attention to the musical guest. I had no idea who she was.
I like Phoebe Bridgers.
Yeah.
I
had it on in the background. I didn't, that was like my break time. Kind of got up and...
I think Phoebe Bridgers is very much in your wheelhouse.
Really? I'll give it
a shot. She's very much a throwback to like 90s indie female rock.
Okay. Okay.
Like, I think she would have fit in.
Like some Veruca Salt type stuff?
Yeah, I think she would have fit in that crap. My big exposure to her last year, the year before.
I thought it was going to be a little Avril Lavigne, which I don't hate. But,
Well, it was either last year or the year before. I can't recall exactly when, but she did like a side project with Connor Oberst of Bright Eyes.
Oh, who I love,
So it was, I think it was called like, it was Better Oblivion... Retirement Center, something like that.
Maybe I'm aware of her and I just didn't even know. Yeah,
and it's fucking awesome. Her and Connor Oberst play off each other very, very well.
Okay.
So my exposure to her was through that project, and then last night was the first time I really watched her do like solo stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought it was wonderful.
All right. I just didn't really pay attention. I didn't give it a shot, to be honest. So
yeah,
I'll go back and give it a shot
for sure.
I'm trying to think what else. Nothing else is popping out in my head. Yeah, it was a good show. It's a fun show. I remember
a
couple times laughing like out loud.
And they gave next week we get Regina King.
Yes,
like she's awesome, solid. Man.
I dig
her. Like seeing her, and I've seen Regina King, but I have almost never seen her be funny. And I think that is going to be, I love that. I love when I see a performer.
Right.
That, like, I have one vision. Like, to me, Regina King is just a fucking badass.
Right.
Like, she is just power.
Yeah.
Watching her be funny, I am stoked on. I can't.
Yeah, those wait are some of shit. Those are usually some of the best guests are like the serious actors who you've never seen do the comedy. And all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, they're like, that's how fucking John Hamm's are doing comedies, basically, because they put him on SNL.
Right,
and then next thing you know, oh shit, he can do this. He's funny.
Yeah,
let's see what he can do in a real show, in a real movie. So, trying to think, the last person I can think of like that would be like a Chadwick Boseman. Like, I don't recall ever him doing a comedy, but then when he was on SNL, he killed it.
Yeah,
I remembered him killing it, and not just like the like Black Panther on Celebrity Jeopardy, or on Black Jeopardy, which was hilarious. Yeah. But he killed it on all kinds of levels. So,
Chadwick.
But I can't think of another serious actor recently who's been on there that killed it. That's probably how.
It's how Christopher Walken broke into comedy.
Sure.
Probably.
Yeah. Alec Baldwin. I mean, he was always in serious stuff until he started doing that. You know, John Goodman, of course, was already on Roseanne before. De Niro, yeah. And he kind of just started doing, like, bits. Like, showing up on the news or whatever and kind of making fun of someone making fun of him. Or him and Joe Pesci showing up on the Joe Pesci show type shit.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're right. And then they do that. Next thing you know, well, maybe it's not all good. Because now he's doing, like, 9 bad grandpas and...
I think Robert De Niro is just at that point where it's like...
If someone's willing to give him a check, he'll do it.
Whatever, man. Like, yeah. I think he's just riding it out.
I guess.
And I think about it. If I'm Robert De Niro, and I am arguably, at least in the conversation, of greatest actors of a generation 40 years ago.
Yeah.
40 to 60 years ago.
Yeah.
And then you get past that, like, you've got all the money, you've got all the accolades. Like, I feel like your choices are either go the way of Sean Connery and just live out the remainder of your years in peace, or say, fuck it, I'm going to have fun. Like, whatever. Because say, like, the Bad Grandpa movie.
Yeah.
While it's horrible, if you're reading that script, it could be a phenomenon. You know, like, think of all those movies that are, like, that on paper probably wouldn't have sang, but end up working because it's the right director and the right cast and the right moment.
I see that.
So if I'm De Niro and I read that script and I'm like, what have I got to lose? I don't need the money. I don't need the respect. I'm like, sure. You know, Marty Scorsese is still going to call me tomorrow anyway.
True.
You know, I can't torpedo my career.
You can't torpedo it. But here, I think it's the same. This is a weird comparison, but this is what I do. It upsets me the same way someone who discovers Machine Gun Kelly for the first time thinks that's punk rock. You discover Bad Grandpa, and that's all you know about Bobby De Niro. That's your introduction to Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a lot of people.
Yeah, but he doesn't fucking care about those people.
That's just not right. It's just not right. I know, get off my lawn type shit, but that's just...
He doesn't give a shit.
I mean, think about, like I don't know, I can't... Like, all the actors you love. What's, like, one of the actors you love? Val Kilmer. That's all I can come up with real quick.
And to a lot of people, Val Kilmer's introduction was Batman.
Yes. You know what I'm saying?
That was my introduction to Val Kilmer.
Right.
Was Batman.
Which is why you have a hard time appreciating quality Val Kilmer work. You compare it all to the Batman shit. You see where I'm going, though?
It's all Batman and Robin.
Yes. Yes. Or, I mean, I don't know. Val Kilmer's a bad example, obviously, but I don't know.
Yeah, he'll always be Batman. He'll never be Iceman to me.
Oh, that's horrid. That's a terrible... Not even Doc Holliday? I mean, come on. Oh, how do you put Batman... Oh, anyway, we've had this conversation. You know, one day, God forbid, that will be what stops this podcast. We'll both have
fisticuffs
Val Kilmer type. Like, I'm tired of your Val Kilmer shit.
Right. It won't just end this podcast. It'll end this partnership. It'll end this friendship.
And everything.
Never want to talk to this motherfucker again. Never. I'm done with him.
Fuck him and his Val Kilmer Batman. He's Iceman. I hope that shows up on Mike.
That's fantastic. Bite.
Yeah. Which that has to come out soon, right? Top Gun?
I'd have to think so.
I know they're waiting for theaters because it's kind of a big movie. You know, you need
What studio made that? Is that Paramount?
I want to say Paramount, yeah. Isn't that pretty much what Tom Cruise works with?
Because it can't be Warner Brothers.
It's not, yeah.
And it's not Disney, so it's not Fox either.
I'm almost 100% they owned it, the original, so I don't know.
Yeah. It's got to be Paramount or Sony? Like, I think those are the only two majors.
MGM have any of that?
Is MGM still a fucking studio?
I think so.
Maybe.
Well, yeah, because they make Bond, right?
Yeah.
So that's like all they got. It's Bond right now.
I guess so.
Yeah. Yes, because I read Disney is trying to buy MGM. Basically for James Bond.
Yeah.
I mean, but MGM was priced at, like, still their vault at $2 billion, whatever the hell might be in it.
Yeah, because MGM was, like, the biggest studio in the world at the dawn of cinema.
Right, like the 30s and 40s. They have
fucking... Right. They have Wizard of Oz. I was gonna say,
it wouldn't surprise me if they had, like, the Stooges and Charlie Chaplin type shit.
Oh, I'm sure they
do. You know what I mean? So, that's probably what their vault is. Mostly black and white, early 60s kind of stuff, so...
Yeah, that I'd have to think that Top Gun's... I would think that they're just not announcing shit right now.
Right, till they
because
have
everything's idea. Changing so rapidly.
Yeah.
But, like, we've got to be on the verge. Because, like, well, Disney announced their slate. Like, we're going to get Black Widow in May one fucking way or the other.
Right.
And I feel like that's going to be... I feel like Black Widow is going to be the one... That lights the fuse for 2021's movie season.
It would be like the gauge kind of where...
I think that's going to come out. And I think it's kind of the perfect movie to do so. Because I think, like... Marvel obviously has an ardent fan base and a huge draw. But it's also not... I wouldn't call Black Widow a tentpole movie.
Sure.
You know, like, I think it's the perfect movie to be like, hey, this movie definitely has enough buzz. This movie would have made a lot of money, but this also wouldn't be the movie that we're buoying our fucking season on.
Right.
So, I think that's the right gauge. And I'd have to think that every other studio is going to be looking at Black Widow as, like, that's the fucking temperature in the room.
Sure.
Like, oh, can Black Widow make... $500 million,
right?
Like, can Black Widow make $200 million,
right?
You know, because I think that's going to be the threshold.
It's gonna, I mean, I hope so. I mean, don't, you know, I hope the theaters can open back up and things get, you know, close to normal as possible. As quickly,
I mean, theaters
possible,
are open, man.
It's true, but I mean, not full capacity, right?
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, I think you have to do, like...
I think it's less about theaters being open and more about people being willing to go to
them. That's possible, too. That's part of it, too.
Because almost everywhere in the country, theaters are open.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like... They're not open in L.A.
Right.
But there's a lot of fucking screens open. You could go to Ronnie's right now.
True.
You could go to any fucking Marcus Theater in the St. Louis region as soon as we're done with this and see a movie.
Right.
And I think most markets are the same.
But nothing's been released.
Right.
There's
nothing that's going to draw you.
Right.
And I think even if there is, how many people at this point are willing to go to a theater? And, like, not just for fear of COVID, but also, like, now we've kind of been spoiled with seeing the movies we want at home.
Sure.
You know, like, the precedent's been set that how many people, like, how many movies could come out that would say... Not just is this worth risking getting COVID or worth risking the social stigma of going to a theater.
Yeah.
And bring me that much joy in theater experience, knowing that it'll be VOD, you know, in a month.
In a couple months, right.
In a month.
Right.
Like, there is nothing that's... being theater exclusive for more than 30 days at this point.
Sure. Sure.
So, like, it's going to need to be, like, movies that are huge fucking spectacles, like Avengers or shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, shit that has a fan base that's starved, like James Bond
or
Top Gun or fucking Ghostbusters, which I will risk life and limb for.
Yeah.
If there is a new strain that pops up in St. Louis the day that Ghostbusters comes out and the entire place is on lockdown, I am putting on a hazmat suit and going to the theater to see Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I'm like, with you.
That movie, that is the movie for me. That there is nothing stopping me from entering the theater. What's that, coming out in June, I think?
So imagine you're a kid and your first experience with Ghostbusters is the reboot. And that's all you know. Is Bad Grandpa.
That's a... Yes, but... If I were a kid, 2016's Ghostbusters isn't that bad. If I'm 9 years old, I'm all right with that movie. And then it gets to open the door for me to go see the other Ghostbuster movies that are better.
No, You.
I'll defend that.
If you loved it, like if you loved Bad Grandpa, Robert De Niro, and you went and saw Godfather 2, you would say, fuck this.
Sure, which is a different thing. If you loved 2016's Ghostbusters, and then you saw the original Ghostbusters, you would love it even more. Like, those are close enough.
I think they're different people. They're different people.
I don't think so.
I think we appreciate 2016 Ghostbusters because of our love for early Ghostbusters, for original Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
If your first experience is that 2016 Ghostbusters, and then you go watch something else, it's a different vibe. It's a different type movie.
Oh, it totally is.
You're not going to have the appreciation for it.
It's a different type movie. It's different execution, but at the end of the day, they're both comedies. They both exist on the same shelf at Blockbuster.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not a slapstick comedy and a fucking Oscar-worthy drama.
No. Those are
two very different things.
They are.
To say Bad Grandpa versus fucking Godfather Part 2.
Fair enough.
The original Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2 are infinitely better execution in 2016.
Sure.
But they are still in the same genre.
Same genre, sure, I get
and
you
I,
that.
And yeah, I think yeah. if you were... And I also think they are for a different audience.
Oh, well, absolutely.
Like Ghostbusters 1 and 2 are comedies for adults.
Mm-hmm.
Like, kids watched them and fell in love with them because ghosts are cool. But those movies were written for people in their 20s and 30s.
Sure.
Ghostbusters 2016 was written for 12-year-olds.
Yes. Yeah.
And I genuinely believe I am forever an apologist for the 2016 Ghostbusters. Not that I think it's good, I don't, but I think it's exactly what they wanted it to be, and I'm okay with that. And I also know that like I had enough friends with young kids when that came out, with kids in the 7 to 10-year-old range that loved that movie. So to me it's like cool. That movie doesn't, it doesn't put me out that movie exists. I just don't like it.
Right.
But it got, it, other people liked it.
Yeah.
And like, it was like, it got more people into the source material. Cause like we think about Ghostbusters as like, yeah, it's an American classic. As far as I'm concerned, Ghostbusters is the perfect comedy that's ever been written. It's the best comedy movie ever. I would say that on my opinion. But like that shit's 30 years old.
Sure.
35 years old. Sure. Like there are generations that don't know Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we forget that because to us it's like, no, you don't forget Ghostbusters. It's fucking perfect. So like I'm cool with the 2016 one existing. I'm at peace with it.
I got no problem with the movie existing. I don't wish it out of existence. I'm not going to go that far. I'm just saying I find it very upsetting. Right, wrong, old man, whatever. That, you know, that would be your first exposure. And
yeah.
Just because I feel like you're missing so much. You're missing so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think the worst part, worse than that being your first exposure to Ghostbusters, is if that's your first exposure to Kristen Wiig.
Well, that's just a travesty.
Because she is fucking hilarious.
Or anybody in that movie, for that matter. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I have never been particularly fond of Melissa McCarthy. I've never found her to be very funny.
I enjoyed her on SNL.
When she hosted?
When she does stuff like that.
Like, I like Kate McKinnon. I think Kate McKinnon's very funny. I think Kristen Wiig is very funny. And I think Leslie Jones is very funny. Yep.
I found her...
Melissa McCarthy, I just have never...
This overall movie I didn't love, but Hangover 3, Melissa McCarthy's in it for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And she's... Her and Zach Galifianakis, this back and forth,
is
pretty goddamn funny. Because they're almost the same kind of person in the...
Yeah.
So they're like... They're talking about like Billy Joel concerts, and it's fucking hilarious. I can see her pull that off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But she's kind of the same character she is... I forget the press secretary's name that she always played on SNL. She played the...
What's his name? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. Sean Spicer?
Spicer, thank you. It's kind of the same type character, like short and like, you know, yelling at people.
I forgot when she did Sean Spicer. Yeah,
she killed on that.
That was so funny.
Yeah, she killed on that. Yeah. I never watched whatever show that was.
It's so crazy. This is as political as I would get, that the Trump administration was so chaotic that, like, it's only been 4 years, and I forgot that Sean Spicer was a person.
Yeah.
And had a great presence on SNL.
That's right.
Because there was so much turnover and tumult in that.
His presence on SNL, like, lasted longer than his, like, term.
Yes. Yeah. And Melissa McCarthy doing it. Yes. That he was super funny.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yeah. That made him a household name. You know what I mean? Right.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah, I'm not going to sit there and say, like I said, I never watched that show that she had on TV. I forget what it was. It was almost like a...
the one on CBS.
Yeah. Looked very similar to Kevin James, like...
Yeah.
King, or whatever it was, you know,
show. I remember seeing that commercial. I think it was just called, like, their two names, like
that sounds
Mark
right.
and Melissa
yeah,
or some
that
shit
sounds right,
like that.
Right, yeah, yep. Didn't really watch it. You know, I
never saw that.
I think it won a bunch of shit, but I never really paid attention.
What I just... Every time I've seen her pop up in a movie... I've found her to be, like, incredibly fine. I'm never like, ew, Melissa right. McCarthy. But, right. like, I've also never been like, yes, Melissa McCarthy. Right. Whereas, like, the rest of those three performers, like, Kristen Wiig, if she's in it, I will watch it.
Right.
No matter what.
Right.
Kate McKinnon, very much the same thing. Yep. Leslie Jones cracks my shit.
That's right.
Libby and I went and saw Leslie Jones do stand-up at UMSL. I guess it was probably 3 or 4 years ago.
So she's right in SNL?
Yeah, she was still at SNL, but it was probably towards the end. Yeah, I bet this was like...
She's been gone that long already?
I bet she's been gone for 3 years.
That's probably right, yeah.
Yeah, this was probably like 17, 18 in that ballpark when we went. Yeah, it was at the fucking Two Hill Theater at UMSL.
Oh, wow.
Which I couldn't believe. And it is top three funniest stand-up sets I've personally been at.
Really?
Like... Off the top of my head, the only one that I can think of that is just automatic, like when we went and saw, me and Gibson went and saw Chappelle last time he was in town, and it's the hardest I've ever laughed in my entire fucking life.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of good stand-up. I think she's at least top three. She nice. Might be just behind that.
Wow.
Like that fucking stand-up set was killer.
That's awesome.
At UMSL.
That's awesome.
A few years ago. And since then, it's the same thing with Leslie Jones, where I'm like, if she's there,
check
I
it
will
out.
Fucking see it, because she delivered in a big bad way.
Yep. Yeah, I miss going to stand up. That was always, I love going to see stand up shows.
Yeah,
I can't wait to get back to that kind of shit.
You ever see Chris Hardwick?
I never saw him live. No,
I saw him last time he was in town. It was probably 6 or 7 years ago at the pageant.
Yeah,
my buddy Ryan. Very disappointing.
Was that the Dead Dad tour? Was it kind
yes.
of the bummer tour? Yeah, I saw that special. The special had some good jokes in it, but it was kind of a bummer special. Like it was.
Yeah,
the,
well,
the
it was
same.
Like, but it was like it wasn't. I'm good with, like, Mike Birbiglia does some bummer specials, mm-hmm. but, like, he's a good storyteller,
yeah.
so it's worth it.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Chris Hardwick is not a great storyteller.
He's not a great storyteller. Yeah, he's a better joke guy.
So it's like, watch, yeah. it was like...
He's a great host.
For sure.
And he's witty as fuck.
He's a fantastic host. I love him on a podcast.
Yeah.
I love him on a talk show.
Yeah. I think he's a good interviewer.
But
yeah.
just him by himself...
It's not the same.
I don't
right.
think he's very good.
No, he's not... I mean, I know he considers himself a stand-up, but I would not... consider him. I mean, he's a stand-up comic, obviously, but
yeah,
that's not what I think of first when I think of Chris Hardwick.
When I think of Chris Hardwick and stand, I think Chris Hardwick could kill in like a stand-up scene mm-hmm. where he could go and do 20 minutes somewhere.
Sure,
but like I think when he goes on tour doing a full hour,
it shows
he just doesn't have it to do a full hour.
I'm with you.
And like I think as a warm-up guy, or if it's just like, you know, oh, he's just showing up at the Improv and he's
right.
one of 15 comics that's going to go tonight,
he's great,
and he's just going to go until he stops getting great laughs,
right?
Maybe it's 20-30 minutes. I bet he'd be fucking awesome.
Yep. I agree,
which is far greater than I could
absolutely
do. So
I still
not,
love Chris
I'm
Hardwick.
Not trying to
yes.
shit on
no,
him
no 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 I still love Chris Hardwick
means. That's
yep.
not a skill set that I share,
not at all. It's funny, I've been listening to a lot of like the comedy channels on satellite radio and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, I love that shit. And of course I always, you know, I love the dirty stuff, but I find myself listening to a lot of like Jim Gaffigan and Brian Regan.
Mm-hmm.
Still so goddamn funny. I mean,
I like Jim Gaffigan.
Jim Gaffigan just makes me laugh, man.
Yeah.
And I know it's like kind of the same thing all the time, but it's fun. Yeah. He is a fun storyteller.
I like Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah, he's great.
Have you watched In and of Itself on Hulu?
I can't say that I have.
So I haven't either yet, and I'm going to do it this week, so I'll talk about it next week. It's on Hulu.
Okay.
And it's like a one-man show, I guess. I don't know very much about it, but I've heard from like 10 people whose opinions I value. They're like, this is wonderful, and I can't tell you much because it would hurt the experience. But I was okay. Like, so what is it? And they're like, well, he's like kind of a comedian, and he's kind of a magician. I was like, well, is it a comedy show or a magic show? They're like, well, it's neither. It's like a one-man show. And I'm like, I am just intrigued by the lack of details people have given me.
Okay.
But like over and over again, I have heard from countless people like,
I'll check that out.
Dude, you've got to watch this. You've got to fucking watch it. So it's like, all right, man, you've got me. This week, I'm going to sit down and watch In and of Itself.
When you say that, and not to say this is what that show is, because I haven't seen it, obviously, but I think of one of my favorite comics, magicians, whatever you want to call them, The Amazing Jonathan.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
Really?
Oh, he made me laugh. That guy
pisses me off.
Fuck, he made me laugh, man.
When I was living in Vegas.
Oh, well, that explains why you hate him.
He was fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
I was like, me and Gibson would just walk
around. Yeah, right at that time, especially. Yeah.
Constant shit where I was just like, shut this motherfucker up. I can't take it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. I loved it. So, you know, Val Kilmer on you.
Right.
Quick break. We'll do a little WandaVision.
I love it.
All right.
Hey, man, it's me, Kevin Smith. Check out alteredstatecomics.com right now. I will wait. But while I'm waiting, I'm going to also tell you, go check out the Altered State podcast, man. They come straight out of St. Louis, Brandon and John, and they are there for all your pop culture needs. They're very orally accented, is what I'm saying, ladies and dudes. So there you go, man. AlteredStateComics.com. It's right there in the name.
All right, and we're back.
Okay, we're back.
And the reason we had to rush back, I know we're going to get into WandaVision.
Yes.
A conversation started, we were off the air, that I just had to bring up on it. We were talking about debating bands, and we were talking about like, oh man, this band used to be awesome, now is or whatever. Fucking Weezer.
Yes.
So... Blue Album is a perfect album. Mm-hmm. Pinkerton is a perfect album. Green Album is a very good record.
Yes.
You know, it's got probably seven good up. It's got seven really good songs out of like 10 or 11.
Right.
Everything since then, some of it's fine, some of it sucks.
Right.
Like each.
There's a song or two on every album, and then that's about it.
And then it's garbage.
Right.
So I've pretty much written off Weezer as like. Yeah, like I don't hate it, but like Rivers clearly writes a song very fucking mathematically, and it's whatever. Have you heard the new Weezer single?
All the Songs I Love, or
yes,
I love that song.
It's
actually
awesome.
I didn't know where you were going.
Fucking good, and it makes me mad how good it is. As soon as I heard it, I was just like, God damn it, Weezer! I was ready to write you off
because
and you come back with this, and it's such a good track.
It's a great hook. It's catchy as fuck. Yeah,
it's so fucking good.
It's Weezer,
and it's such a. Have you seen the video for it?
I have not seen the video for it.
It's such a great Weezer video.
I love it.
Just like I watched. It's like God damn it, Weezer! As soon as I'm out, you pull me right the fuck back in.
It's
such a good track.
For so long, I was like, Weezer's done. And then they'd put out something that I didn't love, but like, fuck, that's catchy.
Yeah.
Like, even like that Beverly Hills song. Like, I hate that song. But then I'm like, it's a catchy fucking song.
That's a jam.
I don't hate the song, but I just, you know. It's just,
you know what's crazy about that, though? Like, how old do you think that Beverly Hills song is?
2009? 7? Somewhere in there?
5.
Wow.
That song came out when I remember listening to that song my senior year of high school.
Oh, wow. Damn.
Like, you think about it where it's like,
I got Pinkerton on the wall. Yeah.
Even recently, Weezer would do something that brought me back, like Beverly Hills. No,
well,
that was
I mean,
15 fucking years ago.
Sure. Well, I was going to that, and then they did, what was a couple of their tunes?
There was the one that was on Make Believe that is very, very good. The video had Elisha Cuthbert in it.
That's what I was thinking of.
What's the name of that song?
I love that song.
And that
here's
was
the pitch, slow and straight. Yeah. All I have to do is swing it over here. I'm going to sing the whole song before I think of it. But I'm a zero. I can't think of the song.
That's an awesome song.
Yeah, I love that
and
song.
And that one's probably 09.
Yeah, that was the next album, I think, basically. After
I remember
Beverly
that
Hills.
That song was huge when me and Gibson were in Vegas when we were living out there. And that was summer of 2009 when me and Gibson were living out there.
So that was big. Okay. I think that's about
right. So I bet that record came out in 08.
Okay. Let's see. What was I thinking of?
But that's on Make Believe.
Make Believe, yeah. And then the Red album came out, which I liked the Pork and Beans song.
That there's a song on the Red album that was The Greatest Man That Ever Lived, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a good track.
Yeah. Wasn't Troublemaker a good tune? I feel like Troublemaker was an okay tune.
That was the lead single. It was very Color by Numbers.
Okay.
Like, very non-offensive, but not particularly good. They released that record, Ratitude.
Ratitude was next.
That was terrible. I don't recall anything on there. But it had the lead single that's awesome. That album has one of my favorite Weezer songs on it. The lead single on it.
Is it this?
It's the one that goes, when I say go. Yes.
That is that one. It? Okay.
I love that song.
Like, I don't think I know that song.
I would put that song in my top 15 Weezer songs.
Okay. And then Hurley came out.
And that album was horrible.
It was horrible. I'm looking at that track list. I don't see a thing.
I haven't listened to anything since Ratitude.
Really?
Like, I'd hear the singles that would, like, pop on. Actually, that's not true because I have... What's the album that has, like, the Sloth Monster
on
the cover?
Yeah, Everything Will Be All Right in the End.
Yeah,
I think it's a fun
record.
Album.
I have that record.
Back to the Shack, I think,
yeah,
is
a
fun
tune.
What was that other song I like? Eulogy for a Rock Band was fun.
Back to the Strat with a Lightning Strat.
Yep. Da Vinci, I think, is a good tune. Cleopatra, I found, like, you know, yeah. I dug three or four tunes on that.
I don't know, man. I'm just saying, now I'm interested in looking at OK Human because that lead single fucking rips.
But then I'm looking at you know, the White Album.
And I don't want to love it.
The White Album, shit. I don't see anything on here I cared for. King of the World was on there, but I didn't care for that tune. That was a single, I think, wasn't it? Pacific Daydream, what was on that? That was all very not great. Well, I do have Mexican Fender. What's Mexican Fender? I remember that tune. Weezer.
Yeah.
You know.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, then they put the...
I don't know, man. I know...
Teal, what'd you think of the covers? Little Weezer cover.
Oh, that one was... Yeah, you showed me that.
Yeah.
What was the cover on that I really liked you showed me? There was one that you showed me that
I
really
loved. I thought Everybody Wants to Rule the World, the Tears for Fears cover was great. They had Africa on there. They had Sweet Dreams, Take on Me, Happy Together. Oh, No Scrubs.
No Scrubs was the one you showed me that I dug.
Yeah, it was fun. Can't say I listened to the Black Album at all. I don't recognize any of those songs. Yeah, I mean, you know.
But dude, this new all I'm saying is after you listen to this, go spend 3.5 minutes to listen to all my favorite songs, and it is wonderful.
It is
classic Weezer.
We got a 12-minute track or a 12-song track list, 30-minute album. That is classic Weezer. I like it.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. But like that song specifically is like, oh, this is the song that made me fall in love with Weezer.
Nice.
It is this specific type of song. Like, I feel like all my favorite songs is Weezer doing exactly what I want Weezer to do. You know. And they've had 14 fucking studio records, and there's really only two of them that I can do front to back.
Sure.
Like Blue Album and Pinkerton, I know every lyric on both of those records. I can't say that for any of their other 12 fucking records.
Sure, that's fair.
So I am clearly not their target audience, but fucking All My Favorite Songs is like, yep, that's the type of Weezer that I fell in love with.
Fair enough.
And I am stoked on that.
Fair enough.
And speaking of being stoked on things, WandaVision.
It's pretty cool.
Oh my God, dude.
It's pretty cool.
It's gotten so good.
I don't even know where you want to start. You want to start at the end? Where do you even want to start? It's obviously spoiler type shit, but...
You know where I want to start?
With that ending, it changes the rest of the MCU forever.
Forever.
Everything's different.
Everything has changed.
Right.
But where I want to start is I feel like this is something that I've mentioned as we've watched WandaVision, but I continue to it continues to get better for me is Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen's performances.
Yeah, agreed.
They are both better performers than I've ever given them credit for.
Right.
Like, right. This show has shown, they have demonstrated such range and such emotional depth. I mean, and what I feel like this episode did for me that I've been needing this whole time is this show recontextualized how the story is being told in one specific way. We now have, it's not a suspicion. It is now kind of, we as an audience finally have a proxy. So like, if you watch the first three episodes, especially as a viewer, you don't know what's going on.
Right.
Right. And they don't give you enough to go on. And it's frustrating. It's like, they're not even giving you enough of a taste to know. So it's like, I'm watching it and I'm trying to figure out like, well, I don't need answers to anything. So why isn't this grabbing me? Why isn't this working?
Right.
And then episode four happened, and I loved it because it gave more information to the story, but it still didn't give me what I needed. This episode finally gave me the thing that I needed. And that is, we are not, from now, and you can go back and rewatch the first episodes and it changes everything. As the viewer, our proxy is Vision.
Right.
Knowing that Vision is trying to figure this out with the same amount of information that we are changes everything to me.
Right.
Because every show you've ever watched, there is always a character that serves as the viewer. It's an important part of telling a story, mm-hmm. is that there is a character that needs to drive the narrative. There's a character that needs to ask the questions that you as a viewer want answers to.
Right.
There is a character that needs to be on a journey to find out the things that you need to find out. And it's never the hero and it's never the villain, but there is always a character that serves your needs as a viewer.
True.
And we haven't had that. And that's been really frustrating. And I couldn't figure out that that's what I needed or was missing. Like I wasn't smart enough to put my finger on that, but it was like, as soon as I saw Vision boil over this week, I was like, that's what as soon as it hit my, it was like a taste. As soon as it hit my lips, I knew it was the taste I'd been missing all along.
Sure.
Like, fine. Okay. This is now the character that I can watch the rest of this series through. Like, he is now my vehicle.
Right.
And even though Wanda is the lead, and I'm certain that there's a lot more with Agnes going on there than we know, Vision is now my focus.
Sure.
Vision is serving my purpose.
Yeah.
Even though, yeah, Darcy's trying to find answers, Jimmy Woo's trying to find answers, Monica Rambeau's trying to find answers, Vision is trying to find the answers that I am trying to find out,
right.
Also.
Right.
And we haven't had that at all.
Sure.
And I'm thrilled that structurally we have that as a viewership now.
What'd you think about like the kids aging? Or just the kids in general?
Loved it.
It was pretty crazy.
I
also love what kept me involved early, because I didn't know what the fuck was going on, was the Twilight Zone-y atmosphere of it.
Uh-huh.
And that still, to me, is happening. Like, even though 100%. We know what's going on, you know, the kids age, everybody just goes with it. Like, they're cool with it, or not, you know, it's just part of...
all of the volume drops out and the Agnes character breaks the fourth wall.
Right.
And she's like, oh, you need me to take that again?
Like, right.
That
you want me
was,
to
that
watch
was such a try. Simple moment and yeah. So simply put together, but it was fucking haunting.
Very.
Like, that was so well done.
Yeah.
And it's like
yep.
They didn't do much there.
Nope.
But they hit every key.
Yep.
Fucking right. Like, yep. That was just a perfectly played symphony in, yes. That scene that was, yep. Like, ooh.
Yep.
And like you said, it was Twilight Zone. It
very,
was,
yeah.
Ooh, this hit me in a place that I haven't been hit in a while.
Right, right.
And I loved it.
It was cool. Very cool. But I mean, even You know, not only that, maybe it's Twilight Zone-y throughout. Like, it stays that way.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
But it's, you know, that unknown, what world am I in? Who the fuck am I? You know, like you said, we're kind of viewing it through Vision at this point. And, you know, he remembers nothing either.
Right.
You know, and now we know that, you know, she stole his fucking corpse and reanimated him, basically. And, you know, it's crazy, but it's great.
And Vision now sees Wanda as the orchestrator of all of this.
Right.
As we are supposed to.
Right.
But I do think to some degree Wanda's probably a victim here as well. Like,
sure.
So like Vision doesn't believe her when she says, I didn't start this. I don't know how this started.
Right.
Like, I didn't make the door open there. Right. Like, Vision doesn't believe her, just like we're not supposed to believe her.
Right.
And that matters to me. Like, exactly. Like, ooh. Monica Rambeau serves some of that same purpose as well, but it's like there is more there than Wanda controlling everything.
Sure.
And I feel like this episode, we finally got our first red herring. Like, they finally are saying Wanda's controlling it all, even though that's not the truth.
Right.
Like, I needed that. Right. I needed a false villain so that I could feel something when the real villain arrives. Exactly.
Right. Right. Well, and it puts, you know, it kind of keeps Wanda in the same vein she's always been in, which is the outsider.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Know, still trying to do the right thing, but someone's always twisting and turning her.
Yeah, and people don't manipulating trust her right? Even though she's trying to do what she can.
Right. I mean, the very end, just her pure shock shows she's not in control of what's going on.
Right.
And that was a question, I don't know if you have an answer. So, you know, when the kids are they asking her? I forget, but she's talking about death and life.
Yeah.
And how she can't create life and all that kind of stuff.
I cried.
It's touching.
Like them, them really genuinely, honestly speaking about grief.
Right, right.
In a way that has never been approached in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. In honesty, there is so much grief. There's so much death and loss.
Right.
This was the first time that I feel like they're giving that the voice that it deserves.
Sure.
And boy, is that powerful. Like, it recontextualizes how I watch the other things that I've already seen. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, you're fine. But, you know, so she says she can't create or she can't bring something back from the dead. So that right there, to me, is when she created the multiverse. Mm-hmm. Because she can't bring her dead brother back.
Yeah.
She brings back a different version of her brother. But then how did she reanimate Vision?
Because Vision wasn't really a living thing.
Because he's a synthoid, basically.
Right. Okay. I think that she rebuilt the Mind Stone.
Okay.
And that's all that needed to happen.
Her powers come from the Mind Stone, so she has that in her.
Right. Right? And the rest of Vision was there. He just needed a Mind Stone.
Like, he didn't. He was always there.
He didn't die. He was taken offline, basically. I gotcha. You know. So I think if you put the spark back in, you get the same result.
Okay.
That's the presupposition I'm operating.
I just didn't know if maybe she was just straight lying to the kids. Because she created them, obviously, too.
Right.
You know, Vision's a synthoid. They didn't have sex and create kids, so.
But, like, the look on Agnes's face, can you do that?
Right. Well, see, that makes me think that they're dead.
Or that she has lost someone.
Right. The husband she keeps calling out to that no one, that's not there.
Ralph is dead.
Right, right.
And I think that's her putting that together. Because I think Agnes is the only...
Well...
I think Agnes is the only one that we're not... That is in on it to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel like... So then that takes me back to...
Well, the other neighbor was aware somewhat too.
Yes, that's true. The other neighbor was somewhat aware.
Yeah.
But I guess it takes me back to an earlier question that... So the whole reason the FBI went to look for Westview...
Missing person case.
But it was a missing person who was in witness protection.
Right.
They've identified everyone except for the Agnes character.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if Agnes is in witness protection because she killed somebody.
Right.
Or because she's part of that.
Something.
So then when she sees... So she's playing along because she's already part of a different lie and maybe that... undercut some of it.
Gotcha.
And she's like, hey, if Agnes is like, hey, if you just let me play along, like, you don't have to manipulate me. I'll do this
right
because I need to stay alive in this other way.
Right.
But now Agnes is like, can you bring people back to life? Could this be my way out of witness protection? Like,
well,
there's a lot of moving parts there.
There's that preview scene, too, where, you know, Vision taps her and she doesn't know if she's alive or dead.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's why I thought maybe she thought she was dead this whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much unknown. That's what makes it great. I mean,
right.
And there's so much Twilight Zone-y stuff that anything's believable.
Right. And now we have enough that we can start to say, like,
right.
Ooh, man, we can start to have ideas and opinions.
Right.
And they could all be fucking wrong.
Totally.
But we have enough information to have them.
Right.
And that, I think, is so much of the fun of watching any sort of science fiction.
Right.
Is that, like, getting that little Susan of, like, all right, here's a fucking taste. Now what do you think the main course will be?
That's right. So I don't know if you saw the interview with Elizabeth Olsen. I think it was a week or two ago. And she was just talking about the show or whatever. And, of course, I never can say much. But she was asked if there was going to be, they were talking about The Mandalorian, if there was going to be a surprise a la Luke Skywalker at the end of this. And she's like, yes, something, you know. So given what happened at the end of this episode, knowing that Quicksilver's history and knowing, I don't know if you knew this, that no one was ever confirmed that they said yes, but Ian McKellen and Fassbender were both contacted to be in this show. Do they show up?
No.
I'm not saying they do. But
I don't think so.
I think the big surprise at the end is Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
He has to show up. Especially if there's a multiverse. That makes sense. He shows up at the end saying, you know, Wanda, what have you done? Or the type of shit. You know what I mean?
I think the fact that they brought in Evan Peters is remarkable. And I love it.
Yeah.
Baldwin's own Evan Peters.
Yeah.
He's from this neighborhood, sir.
I forgot about that. That's right.
He's my age. We would have graduated the same year. But so the fact they brought in Evan Peters, I think for us as fans of everything, says a lot. And I have a million thoughts on what it could mean. But I think as just they have the challenge of balancing the casual viewer with the deep viewer.
Right.
So I think, for example, if we're going to equate it to Mandalorian, the deep viewer at midseason, we got Bo-Katan.
Right.
We got Ahsoka.
Right.
Right? That's Evan Peters.
Right.
Evan Peters is Ahsoka.
Right.
Right? It's a huge revelatory thing that changes everything. But you really only know that if you're in on it.
Yeah.
So I think their big get at the end has to be an established MCU character.
Right.
So that it hits every... Like Luke Skywalker, whether you've only seen one Star Wars movie...
You know Luke Skywalker.
Luke Skywalker is a big fucking deal to everybody.
Right.
Just like Evan... Like Michael Fassbender showing up as Magneto is a big deal, but... Only if you're in on it.
Right.
And, you know, those movies make a gajillion dollars, so you have to assume almost everyone's in on it. But you still can't take that for granted.
True.
So I think it's got to be an established MCU character, which would lead to Doctor Strange, I think is a huge opportunity. I think Tony Stark is a possibility. Even if it's just, like, as a memory or as a construct.
Right. Right.
You know, like, I don't think they're going to bring him back to life,
right.
But I think there is a very distinct possibility that a Tony Stark shows up.
Well, especially once they get to the timeline, the next couple episodes where they're closer to Avengers doing shit in New York and things like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, because they're in the 80s right now, they'll be in the 90s next year, you know, so they're getting a couple episodes. By the end, they're right there where we should be, time-wise. So
I think if I were putting money places, I think Doctor Strange is the number one. Mm-hmm. I think that's the smart money. But I think Tony Stark, I think Thanos, I think Captain Marvel.
Sure. Well, they've set up some stuff
because
for the next Captain Marvel
Monica
movie with
Rambo.
You know, where they're like, you know, Wanda could have taken Thanos by herself if he didn't, you know, unleash the blah, blah, blah. And then what's her name said, and I can make the case for Captain Marvel, and she rolls her eyes. And,
right.
You know.
The way Monica Rambeau reacted to Captain Marvel is very telling to me.
Yeah.
Like that.
Well, I'm assuming you know when her mom was dying of cancer for a couple years, there was no Captain Marvel around.
Yeah.
And that's probably a sore spot, because Captain Marvel probably could have done something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And was her best friend.
Or got the cancer from something in space, or, you know, something along those type lines. Blames her for her mother's death. I would assume it was something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
I do think when she mentioned, ooh, I know an aerospace engineer. Mm-hmm. Am I the only person who said one immediately to Reed Richards?
No, not at all.
Because I heard that and I was like,
yeah.
Ooh, is this going to be an end of Fantastic Four? Is this going to be a first mention of Reed Richards?
Did you see, I don't want to call it, it's a rumor that's sort of confirmed.
That Krasinski's going to show up?
No. Well, this isn't Dr. Reed. This isn't confirmed for this show, but they're leaning more towards Doctor Strange's new movie, which is kind of just the same multiverse stuff. Chris Evans has signed on to play two characters.
Dude, if we get Chris Evans, Human Torch, meeting Chris Evans, Captain America.
Hydra, Captain America. And Human Torch. Is what they're saying.
Chet, I'm going to shit a solid gold brick.
Right? That'd be pretty amazing.
Oh.
So he would not be lying that he's done with Captain America. But if he comes back, he'd be playing the Hydra Captain America in a multi-universe and the Human Torch and the MCU.
Dude, if you could bring back that, if Jessica Alba and Ian Griffold and what's his name? The dude from The Shield. Michael Chiklis.
Yeah.
Ed Evans.
I don't know if they're going to get all four. I have not heard anything. The internet wants Jessica Alba, obviously. Who doesn't? I mean, just put on those pants and let's go. But, you know, Chris Evans already has a relationship existing, and why not play one more character?
That would be fun, man.
Yeah, I think cool. Be cool.
That would be fun. Yeah,
but once again, what happened in this episode makes all that entirely possible.
Right, like the opening. Well, and it's interesting, like, to see. So, Evan Peters shows up as Pietro, and she's clearly shocked. So,
was he ever referred to as Pietro?
In the X-Men movies?
Yeah.
They called him Peter.
That's what I thought. X-Men movies. Okay, just making sure. But,
because
he was from, like, California or something.
Yeah. But, like, in that situation, like, I'm wondering if it's a multiverse opening thing, or is there a is Pietro actually revived and, you know, Aaron Taylor Johnson didn't want to do it, or they want, like, you know, that's a, like, I think there's genuine possibility.
I think just based on her shock, not really knowing if that was for sure her brother.
Yeah.
It's gotta be, it's a multiverse thing. It's gotta be.
I think so, but I, like, it could be another red herring, man. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah.
Because that, I guess the only thing that I think of is, like,
or maybe they do one of those, you know, total 90s sitcom things where it's you bring in
a new actor,
the other Pietro, like, you know, this character, this guy only lasted for one episode, and then we bring in the real guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For but the next season or whatever, you know, type shit.
I guess I'm just intrigued because I really felt like. And maybe this is just me not knowing how to process being entirely wrong, is that, like, I thought for sure they were just going to scrap what Fox was doing with X-Men and start anew. And now this is telling me they're not.
They're going to build on it.
Like,
they're going to use it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting. Like, I still haven't watched New Mutants, but I'm looking forward to it. I think Sophie Turner got a bad rap as Jean Grey. I think she could do great, so I'd like to see her recast.
Yeah.
The kid that they had playing Cyclops, playing Scott Summers, I think did a really nice job. I can't remember his name.
Come on. Patrick Stewart. When are we getting Patrick Stewart?
We're not.
No?
I think I wouldn't be shocked if we get Fassbender and McAvoy.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I just don't see Marvel.
He's wrapped up with CBS and that Picard show probably for
a while. And like Marvel's playing the long game here.
They are, yeah.
They are, like, X-Men are going to be a huge part of what they do moving forward because that's their untapped resource.
Right. Yeah, you got to build them for 5 years before you do X-Men versus Avengers type thing.
And I just don't think you put that much investment into those two aged of actors at this point. And I think unless you were to do a Days of Future Past type thing, which was already done and that was the big comeback. Yeah. So like I don't think there's any way to do Ian. Why can't I think of his last name all of a sudden?
McKellen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart, and make it that exciting, because we've already seen them like birth those roles and then come back. Like we saw Fox manipulate that for 15 years. That, like, if I'm Marvel, I don't see an upside to that. Fair. Yeah. Whereas I do see an upside to like James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender are fantastic performers, and they're young.
They're not going anywhere.
And like you can build off of what they did.
Right.
And make it really, really strong and really good. I don't see what you can add to Ian McKellen's Magneto and Patrick Stewart's...
No, that's true.
Professor X and make it worth anything.
That's fair. Yeah.
So it just seems like a... It seems like a pointless risk.
Even if we just had him for, you know, like the Wolverine cameo. Go fuck yourself.
I don't...
No, you don't want that even?
I don't not want... Like, if it happens, I'll be like, oh, cool.
Is it just fan service at that point?
Yeah. Like, and it wouldn't... It wouldn't even be the most exciting fan service to me.
Yeah.
Because I've seen so much of those characters doing that, and I've seen them play with timelines so much that like when they came back for Days of Future Past, that to me was like, fuck yes, dude, that's so cool.
Right.
I already got that moment. Getting it again from a new company, it just like, it doesn't...
No, that's fair.
And I just wouldn't give a shit.
I wouldn't see them... rehashing something like that anyway. They don't need to. So no, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with
so you. Like to me, if you're telling me at the end of the season, I get either Fassbender or McKellen. If I get McKellen, I feel like this entire show is a fucking dream and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If I get Fassbender, I'm fucking geeked. So like just from a viewer standpoint, I think either one would be cool. Right. Like I'm not poo-pooing on it.
Right.
But I just feel like that's the cost benefit analysis does not come up fucking positive.
Right.
For Patrick Stewart or Ian McKellen to
me. Right.
As wonderful as they both did in those roles.
Totally.
They've done.
No, I'm just throwing it out there. I don't need to see Patrick Stewart out there.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of what's the big shock. And you know,
the best one, the one that I do want to see is goddamn Hugh Jackman.
Sure.
Because I don't, no matter how many, I can sit here and be like, Ian McKellen, Patrick Stewart, I don't care. Hugh Jackman's Wolverine.
It's great.
If that motherfucker shows up, I will shit.
Yeah.
That will be the one.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't you just want to see some stupid Deadpool thing too, where it's just like, you know, hey, I did all this in my last movie. My end credits did all this. I mean, covered it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I remember seeing something when that all came out. It was probably not even that long ago. Where they were going to kind of use that as he went back, Deadpool changed the timeline and fucked up, you know, created the multiverse because he changed all this in different universes and whatever. So, I thought that was pretty funny.
But That'd be funny.
Deadpool can always be a standalone movie, even, you know what I mean? It's always just there. He can do whatever he wants just based on how it writes out.
So. And you can bring anybody in from any of those universes and not make it match up
with the
timeline, and it's still just
doesn't
be entertaining and fun.
Right. Because all he has to do is look at the camera, give you a Ryan Reynolds line, and you're done. Thanks, Ryan. I'm in.
Yeah.
Next.
Bring in fucking Halle Berry shows up. Right on.
Right.
Hugh Jackman shows up. Whatever.
Yep. Yep. I love it.
Fucking bring back, what's his name? Who was the dude that played, why can't I think of his name? What they need to do for Deadpool 3 is bring back the guy who played Captain Rhodes in Iron Man before they recast Don Cheadle.
What's his name? Who's in like Empire and shit? Yeah.
If that dude showed up in Deadpool, that would be entertaining.
That'd be hilarious. That'd be hilarious. Yeah, just constantly reference Iron Man. Like, hey, what's Tony Stark up to? And you know, bullshit like that.
Or Edward Norton.
It'd be great.
Like, that's a great get for Deadpool.
Or what was the guy before that? Get
Eric
them both.
Bana.
Beric Bana. Yeah. Little Liv Tyler. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, man.
Which wouldn't surprise me if they do all that.
Yeah. And in Deadpool, you can.
That's right.
Because everyone's in on the joke and it's just fun.
That's right. That's right.
It doesn't need to move the plot forward.
Not a, right. Yeah. I don't really have anything else. Dustin Diamond died the other day. That was a bummer. I don't want to end on a bummer, but you know, I know he had some rough patches, but I love Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
That was my shit.
Did you watch have you watched the one on Peacock, the reboot?
I tried.
Did you? I haven't even tried. Don't.
I wanted to love it so bad. And sure, maybe it's that thing where it's just not made for me anymore. Obviously, you know, it's more of a kid's show. But the cameos are just forced. The comedy is just, I mean, maybe it's the same comedy. Maybe it's, you know, Saturday morning comedy. I'm just not, you know, it's just.
You're just not 12 anymore. Just,
right. Yeah, so it didn't, you know, Zach is like the mayor of California or whatever, LA.
That sounds about right.
Slater's the wrestling coach / history teacher type shit, you know what I mean? And Jesse is the counselor. It's just, it's too forced.
Okay.
You know, and Saved by the Bell, what do you want? But, you know.
And that's it, like.
I've seen Jesse full naked. I don't need to see, you know, it's not the same anymore.
Well, that's like Saved by the Bell was just a touch before me.
Sure.
Like I grew up around it. My older sister
probably loved it.
Yeah. Like she was the target audience.
Yeah.
So I was that close to it.
Right.
You know, like it was always on in my house all the time. Very familiar with it. But I was a Boy Meets World kid.
Sure.
You know, like it was that 4 or 5 years is just enough.
Yep.
Where it's like, yeah. So a Saved by the Bell reboot was like, oh, I know all these characters, and I'm certain I've seen every single episode of Saved by the Bell.
Right.
But it's just like, I don't have any relationship with this enough to give a shit.
Yeah. I watched the first episode, and, well, I watched, the first episode was on my TV. it was just rough, man. It was rough. Once again, it's probably not made for me, so I can't shit all over it, but if you're 12 years old, first off, why listen to this podcast? But yeah, go ahead and watch that if you're 12 years old. So
fair.
Yep.
If you loved Ghostbusters 2016,
you'll love
Saved by the Bell reboot. Saved by the Bell.
That's right. And after all, that's our target audience.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Tween girls.
If you love this podcast, I guarantee you loved the reboot of Ghostbusters. Guarantee it. That's all I got, my friend. Anything else?
That's fair enough, man.
All right. Later, guys.
See ya.